Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Biz Radio at 100.2 FM, Freeview 277, and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely wonderful Linda Cloke.
And Linda Cloke is doing what Jules normally does, so I'm eating on the show.
Are you?
I'm eating strawberries and Greek yoghurt.
You got strawberries and Greek yoghurt. She normally has a boiled egg and something weird. But
so is that
strawberries
naughty?
And yoghurt's good.
That's all right. That's all right, is it?
Yeah, I'll let you. You've made me a cup of coffee as well, which is fantastic. So thank you. Yeah, welcome back. We've got a lot of things to cover. We heard from Simon in the first part of the show. We've got a fantastic second guest to talk to shortly. Mr. James Gardner, but we have got to catch up on some of this stuff we've got.
Yes,
so there's the Marsh Network Breakfast face-to-face meeting taking place on the 2nd of March at Dimchurch. The breakfast meeting of the Marsh Network, where you can meet up with people to network, make new contacts, give and receive support, develop and grow your business. Come along and tell us about your business, charity or CIC, and what support, clients or engagement you're looking for. Enjoy an excellent full English breakfast at the lovely Ship Inn in Dimchurch. If you want to find out more or book a place on that, it's marshnetwork.co.uk.
Brilliant. I've got one here. International Women's Day 2023. Embrace equity. Will you hashtag embrace equity in 2023? Can you imagine a world free of bias, stereotypes and discrimination? Join us and collectively celebrate all women's achievements and specifically in the world of business. That's Wednesday the 8th of March, 10:30 a.m. to 12 p.m.
I've got one of those as well.
Yes.
I've got an International Women's Day event with Sevenoaks Town Team at the Bat and Ball Community Centre in Crampton's Road, Sevenoaks, on Wednesday the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day, 12 to 3:30. If you want to find out about that, or book a ticket, campusradio.co.uk/Canada.
Super. Have you got a little time each month to spare and would like to help others locally? If you have, the Music Well CIC would be delighted to hear from you. Maybe you've not heard of Music Well. Don't worry at all. It's been going for 12 years now and does wonderful work locally, such as music therapy, singing groups for children and adults, drumming circles, mindfulness, etc., all of which benefit the mental health and well-being of all involved. It is amazing work. I've heard of that, actually. It is amazing. Drum work is absolutely brilliant, isn't it, for mental health?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, really good. So, how can you help? Well, additional directors are needed to help and support the work of the Music Well. You don't need to be musical. You don't need to be musical to be a director of the Music Well. Being a director is not an onerous task at all, and there are others to work with. Meetings are once a month. Teachers and therapists are employed to lead the therapy and singing music groups. Please do consider finding out more. For further information and a no obligation chat, please phone Liz Butt, the founder of Music Well, who lives in Rye, on 01797 223 920.
Don't have to be a middle-aged mum for that.
No, I don't think so. Any age will do.
Cool.
We can even apply.
Cool. Nice one. Folkestone and Hythe District Council have introduced a green business grant scheme to help smaller businesses become more energy efficient. Grants of up to £10,000 may be available for your business, and in some exceptional circumstances, grants of up to £25,000. The scheme will currently run until the 31st of March 2024. To find out more or to apply, go to folkestone.works/green business grant scheme. That's folkestone.works/green business grant scheme.
And I've got one here from a jeweller where we're moving into, actually.
Yeah, I saw that, and you were telling me last week, yeah.
That's right. So a jeweller has revealed the opening date for his new town centre branch. Owner of Blackwell Jewellers, James Marsh, snapped up the building in Gables Hill, Maidstone, which was home of Cornell and Sons for 225 years after its owners decided to retire.
Mind you, at 225, you'd think they would retire, wouldn't you? He must have built out a right old pension by then, Simon.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, of course, they'd be nearly as old as you then, Paul.
Well, let's not get carried away there. Yeah.
He said, "We did not want to change it too much. I wanted to keep the traditional Cornell's jewellers feel, but have Blackwell's modern twist to it." And I must say, we've been in there, because obviously we're looking at the offices because we're moving in there, and he's made a fantastic job of it. You know, he's kept all the authentic cases that they've got in there. Right. So it hasn't changed very much at all, just sort of updated the carpet.
Because it's a gorgeous little shop, isn't it? Halfway down the hill, Gabriel's Hill.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's been there since the 18th century.
My El, so she's 25, and what was she worried about? Someone breaking in, because we've got a friend who worked in a bank and someone went in with a shotgun, I found. Mm. And he assured us when we were in there last week not to worry, because what we can do is just shut the door and switch the alarm on, so she's well chuffed. We'll be locked in.
Cool. Had a tweet. I think you read one, but I'm not sure if you read this one from Sarah Marsh Collins. She said, I'm listening to the Business Bunker Show with Vanilla Webb and Linda. Goings on and business banter, random facts, Kent place names, cheesy tunage, all kinds of things going on. Yeah, so thank you, Sarah. We won't mention place names this week. I've been doing that on Twitter this week.
Place names?
Yeah. Some American went, you know, what's the point in coming to the UK when they have place... They named the famous Welsh place with the 27 Lambton, things in it. That's him.
Yeah.
That's him. Oh, yeah. And they
can't
said,
say it properly.
Well, they the said only place I know is... Is Snowdon in Wales?
Yes. Yeah.
I only know that because I'm climbing it.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, well, if you think that's bad, there's lots of other places with silly names in the UK, not least of which we've got ham and sandwich within a few miles of each other. So.
Yeah. And they've got Mississippi, which is always a great one for spelling tests.
Exactly.
There are so many, particularly in the south of America, some really entertaining place names, none of which come to mind. But
a lot of American place names are corruptions of Native American names, you know, like Massachusetts and things like that. But there you go. Life as planned, our friends with the festival have also said there's a generation who don't know about wire hangers or understand a bit more choke on that jokes.
Yes, I know. I saw that. That's funny.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well done, ladies. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, if someone fancies a night out, we've got DJ Aldemello is doing an 80s night on the 11th of March at Edenwood Place.
Cool. Michael Parts of AOS says, thank you for the fantastic shout out, Vanilla Webb. So we're up to five now, Simon.
What, five listeners?
Five listeners,
well,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
God, and that's three more than last week, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
We should feel really flattered. They're probably here to listen to us.
Yeah. We're going for a real record.
Right at the front.
Yeah.
So a former Kent Debenhams department store, which now lies empty, could become home to a council's offices. The huge building in Sandgate Road, Folkestone, is already owned by Folkestone and Hythe District Council. Plans for the local authority to move from its current base at the Civic Centre in Castlehurst Avenue are being considered as part of a wider town centre redevelopment plans. A report being put to the authority's cabinet at a meeting tomorrow night, will ask councillors to agree, explore the potential for the council to relocate to the site, which has been rebranded Falker following the closing of Debenhams.
I can hear you.
Oh, right.
Simon, you...
I'm hearing natural voice. I'm not hearing it in the cans, that's all.
Oh, okay. Have you turned it down?
I can hear you fine in the cans. I just can't hear Linda in the cans, that's all. Sorry, dear listener, we're just doing a little bit of technical stuff live on air here.
Please let us know if you can hear me, guys.
I
was going to say, I haven't twiddled with anything.
No, I think the listeners can hear you, and I can hear you in the room, but your voice is not coming through my headphones. So there's probably a foldback knob somewhere. Oh, you're getting it on foldback.
Yeah, I can hear it, so it's obviously
it's just me.
Yours, yeah.
Oh, well, there we go.
I'm not sure what's going on there.
I'm just deaf.
No, it could be. We do get these problems from time to time.
A little tweak.
Okay. What I'd like to do now... Had you finished reading what you were reading?
I have, yes.
Yeah, okay. I want to talk to our next guest. That's what I want to do.
Hooray!
I want to talk to James. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome for the very first time onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. James Gardner. James, thank you for joining us on the show. It's a pleasure to have you on. You and I have known each other for quite a while, and I'll explain why and how in a moment. But why don't you kick off by just telling the listeners the five listeners that we've determined we've got.
It's probably six or seven now.
Oh, it must be by now, yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you, James, and about Viners and Sons?
Brilliant. Thank you, Paul. Yeah, no, it's fantastic to be here, and hopefully we can keep all of those listeners for the whole duration of my talk here. But my journey with Viner & Son started when I was about 14 years old, and I used to wash the cars for them on a Saturday morning.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Indeed. Okay.
So Viner & Sons is a funeral directors based in West Malling.
Right.
It's one of the oldest funeral directors and businesses in the country because it was established in 1777.
Blimey.
Wow. So it's over 250 years old now.
Wow. Okay, so they were there when Cornell's were there as well, almost. Yeah. Yeah. Or probably before Cornell's, yeah.
Yeah, but
okay.
Paul was there 50 years before.
Paul opened it.
Oh, thank you for that, Simon. Yeah.
So that was my start of my journey with Viner & Sons, and it grew from there, and throughout my education, I kept in touch with them, and actually left university early to go and work for them full-time.
Right.
And that was my first kind of full-time job as a funeral director, aged around 19, something like that, 20.
Oh,
and,
wow.
I worked there for about a year or so.
Oh, wow. Now, you see, I didn't know that because when I met you, there was long past doing all that, and you were heavily involved in other businesses, which I'm sure you'll tell us about in a minute. So I didn't realise that when you that you'd actually come full circle. I love that. That's
returned
fantastic.
Returned to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so that was my sort of first take into that world. Yeah. But as a young man, I kind of realised quite quickly two things, I think. Mm. One, that my name wasn't above the door, so yeah. I wasn't really going to progress very far in the business. And also, back in those days, when you were on call at the weekend, you literally were at home on call waiting for the home phone to ring. Mm. This was before mobile phones, so it's quite restrictive.
Right.
As a young person. So I left there to conquer the world, as I say, and I went up to London for a couple of years. I worked for HSBC Bank for a year, and I also worked for Connex Southeastern as well for a year before starting up a business with my brother Paul, who you know as well, in the manufacturing world.
Fantastic. Yeah, Paul's been on the show many years ago when in the early days when we started the show in Dimchurch, and he told me off about this when because I'd say you were in a rubber doodads business, is what I used to say.
That's right. I was hoping you weren't going to mention it, but you did.
A very successful business making
rubber doodads.
Yeah, yeah. I was a bit rude about that rubber doodads because it sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it? But of course it isn't. They were making buckets and. Bowls and
we were making lots of plastic parts for industry. But your terminology seems to carry more.
Yeah, I know.
Which industries?
Yeah,
so, lots of different industries. Again, actually, including the healthcare.
Right.
So we grew that business. Literally, my first day was on my sister-in-law's dressing table, as all good entrepreneurial businesses start out.
Mm-hmm.
Had a laptop and a fax machine because that's what you had in those days. And we were contacting potential clients and customers to try and sell them these different plastic protective parts for industry. So
it's interesting because we started a business with a laptop from home back in the day. And you used to have to do your internet connection on dial-up, and you got that sound. And somebody played the sound, which I hadn't heard for years. And the thing was, how many people remember this sound? Because nobody under 35 will know what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all those things that...
dial-up modems and everything.
Yeah, well, exactly
Sound dial-up modem.
Fax machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting. So yeah, so we grew that business literally from the dressing table, and we grew that to be one of the largest growing companies in our sector at the time, and we grew over into America and set up our own factory and warehouse in America as well. Went international, which was really exciting.
Absolutely.
There's not many people. I mean, you know, you say that very matter-of-factly, and in all modesty, he's not saying that to brag, but, I mean, there's not many people that can pull that off, build a successful manufacturing business in the UK, which is not famed for being friendly to manufacturing businesses, and then actually get into the States, which is actually quite tricky for a whole host of reasons, which you're obviously very familiar with, and build a business there and then cash it out. I mean... credit to you, sir. That's a real achievement.
Thank you. That's really kind. And that's actually kind of how we ended in cashing out, as you put it. So, you know, we got on the radar of the local business that was in St. Louis in Missouri, where we were based. And they said, how can these guys come over into our territory and in our backyard and grow this business from nothing to what it was?
And beat us.
Yeah. So they acquired us.
Right.
As good American companies do.
We're not having that. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the best advice we give to business owners when they were talking about selling, and we get involved in that just a little bit very occasionally because it's not our core business, is you say, who would want to buy you and what about you do they want to buy? And then play to that strength. keep marketing in that area. So they're interested in you, the fact that you're in that market. So build that market, become the strongest player in that market, because then you're going to get the profit from selling to that market and the capital value when somebody comes along with a chequebook. And you sort of did it by accident. Well, what a happy accident.
Yeah, very much so. And part of the sale requisition was that we would stay on, and every team member that would stay on across both sides of the pond, and obviously the sale price as well that we negotiated and agreed. And that's what happened. And after several years, we kind of we grew the companies together, both here in the UK and in the US as well. And we had our own facilities that we could tap into then in China and Australia as well, being part of that larger global organisation. But that kind of gets me onto the sort of latter part of the story, which was I eventually took over as MD of that company. We had around 100 employees, two manufacturing sites, 24/7 manufacturing facility at both facilities. And it was good, but it just wasn't quite like running your own business.
Right. Yeah.
And for those that have run their own business, or people that are listening that do run their own business, I think you'll be able to understand that. At times it's desperately hard and difficult, but then sometimes there's just nothing like it. So even though the Americans were a fantastic company to work for and let me have quite a lot of autonomy as the MD here in the UK, it still wasn't quite like that. So I was looking at what was my next venture going to be. Was I going to stay here, like you said earlier, Simon? Was I going to get the pension at 65 and the gold watch and have a, you know, fairly easy latter part of my career? Or was it time to roll the dice and do something?
Do something else.
Yeah. So that's what we did. And I was thinking, what business do I want to go into? And Lynn said it earlier, a recession-proof business is what I was looking at. This was pre-pandemic. And the phrase kept coming back to me, which is a phrase I'm sure you've heard many times before as well, that there are two certainties in life. And on your radio show today,
and we've got them both.
Which is death and taxes.
Yeah,
and I didn't know much about the taxes world, apart from paying a load, which I'm going to try and reduce that down now after today's conversation. But I did know about the death industry and the funeral profession because of being that involvement that I'd had as a younger man.
So you came back to your roots.
Absolutely, yeah, it's really interesting. So I was looking up how to do that. I didn't necessarily want to start a new business. I didn't want to, you know, go through that pain of doing a new startup, because that's quite painful. So I was looking at how you could, you know, acquire a business.
Yeah.
I stumbled across a guy called Jonathan Jay from the Dealmakers Academy. He had books and podcasts and YouTubes, and he had a LinkedIn competition that he was running. He was going to speak at an event in Amsterdam. And the people that were flying him over to the Amsterdam event had booked a private jet for him to fly over. And he had four empty seats, and he was giving away four tickets on a LinkedIn competition. And I was one of the lucky winners to get one of those seats.
Wow.
So 31st of August 2019, one of the many Brexit dates that we ended up having, I was at Biggin Hill Airport early in the morning with these other guys, and we went across. We spent the whole day learning and asking him questions. And I came back really fired up from that, and I spoke to my wife and said, I really want to do this, and I think I want to go back into the funeral profession because it's recession-proof.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to go and speak to my friend who runs the funeral directors and just see whether he's, you know, what's his timeline for potentially exiting or retiring. So that's what I did. That was August 31st. October that same year, I went and had a coffee and a catch up with my friend. And I was building up the courage whilst I was having a coffee to get to this question that I wanted to ask him. And the question was simple, which was, I don't think you've got a succession plan ready, but when you do want to sell the business, would you give me first refusal on the business? And he turned around and said, I think I'm ready now.
Wow.
Wow.
That's serendipity, isn't it?
That made me go cold.
Right time and right place. That was October, 19th of October, 2019.
That is a fabulous story, James. Because of your history with him, I'm not trying to cast aspersions towards him, but do you think that tipped him over the, because it was you, because you knew it, and it was just a background thing in his mind, but because you came along and said it, and he went, do you know what, that's made up my mind.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. That came out afterwards, you know, that I think other people had approached him and it wasn't quite right. He wasn't ready to hand over the reins.
Yeah.
Don't forget, this is a 250-year-old business which has got your name above the door.
Yeah.
And to pass it over to someone, you've really got to trust them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I felt very privileged to be able to do that.
How did going to winning the LinkedIn competition spur you on?
So Jonathan Jay, who runs the Steelmakers Academy, teaches people how to acquire businesses.
Right, okay.
Mm. That's what I learned at that stage there.
Yeah.
And he teaches people to buy businesses without using any of their own funds or any cash. And that's how it came about.
Right.
It's quite interesting. Now I'm actually helping him to teach other people
how
to do that as well.
Which is cool, because I'm going to speak to you about that at some point. The information you learnt on that, you know, without giving up too much away, was that beneficial in terms of you acquiring Vinus, or was it
the whole lot, the whole process was, and to be able to spend that day with him, which is quite a rarity, and be able to literally one-to-one session for the whole day, really answered all the questions that I had about how do you do this and how do you do that.
So it was as much factual as attitudinal, for want of a better expression, because one of the things I find myself saying to financial advisors that work with our business, our business services clients, but we also service financial advisors, and we help financial advisors become more successful, provide a better service to their clients, they make more money, we get a bit, and everybody does. It's a sort of synergy. But a large part of it is a bit like when we went into the recession, we said we went into lockdown, we're not going to join in, we're going to keep open and we're going to keep doing stuff. And it was our attitude was, we don't want to close, we want to stay open, we want to carry on looking after our clients, and we became successful. And it's interesting that it sounded like it was sort of half and half. Half of it was motivational, yes, you can do this, make it happen, and the other half was the factual bit, because it's so much of what we do is in our heads.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we think we're successful, we're successful. If we think we're failed, we're almost certainly right. And it's when you've got somebody telling you can do this, then you usually can.
Don't think it's timing as well, because, you know, we've all got so much stuff going on in our lives. It's about timing as well. It's having the right, being in the right mindset at the right time when it all comes along, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And and again, serendipity played its part there. And had I not have gone and asked him then who knows where I'd be right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
But you make your own luck, don't you? You decided you wanted to do something, and you took a step. You entered the competition, and you had a go.
Yeah.
Apropos of absolutely nothing, a guy local to where we live, and I won't say too much about that, came and knocked on the door, said, I'm a bit short, you got any work I could do? Da, da, da. And we said, yeah, no problem. You're in our manor, we'd love to help you, and we've got some stuff that needs to do. Do you want to do this? And he did about 3 hours and got his 30 quid, and he never came back. Right. And he did the same thing to another neighbour of ours, got his for 20 or 30 quid, and never came back, and left what he was doing half undone because he didn't follow it through.
Right.
And it's as far as I know, the guy's still not got a job. And that kind of sums it up. Now, the problem is, my wife's just said, you know, I won't have him come again because he just left a bit of a mess what he was doing. I mean, it wasn't a bad mess, but, you know, he didn't tidy up.
It just wasn't what you wanted.
It wasn't what we wanted. And it's attitude. If the guy had shown up and done what he was doing, there's loads of other stuff. I've got a bad knee. I can't do anything at home until just recently. Yeah. So some help to around the house would have been fantastic. And if the guy had been reliable and, you know, proved himself to be great, we plenty of work we could have given him.
Yeah.
And he just chose not to do it. And it's such a shame.
It shows you, doesn't it? It is an attitude.
Yeah.
You know, I'm making this up because I don't know. I don't know what you were doing, and I don't know him, obviously. But the thing is, it all depends how you think about things like that. I mean, he could have been sat there thinking, I don't really want to do this as a living. But if he had an ounce of awareness, he could go, well, hold on a minute. The Webster family are giving me work. The Smith family are giving me work. The Jones family are giving me work. There's enough work here. I can employ someone to do this. And I can sit at home while they do it.
Those Websters are connected, they know people. If I make a good impression and say, I'll tell you what, this is not what I want to do for a living, but I will work hard, I will run my sleeves up. You've got any opportunities in any of the businesses that you know or associated with? I mean, I'm not saying I could have found him something, but I'm just saying it was always a possibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always a possibility.
Yeah. So, James, you acquired Vinus, which is a fabulous story, and I'm really interested in that. I'm going to come and buy you lunch now because you're going to tell me all about it off air. I mean, because you made reference to this as well. As I've said a couple of times on the show so far, my businesses have struggled for the first time. My approach to that is to start two new businesses, which is what I've done.
The right answer.
Yeah, but of course, as you intimated, a startup business has a long time before it generates anything, and it's kind of hard work. So acquiring a business is a potential way out of that.
Yeah.
But of course, there's a lot of things to think about when you do that.
There is, but again, not too many things different to starting your own business, really. Mm. And actually, I would argue the toss that there's less things to think about.
Right.
You know, there's already a website domain, there's already telephone numbers, stationery in the cupboard, there's already a logo, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You've already got a team there that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So
there's already people with the history of coming through the door. I mean, obviously, people tend to come through your doors once. But nevertheless, you've got a presence. People know who the business is. Mm. You've had to build that name awareness up. It's already there, and that's
the trust is already there.
The goodwill, as they call it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the families and the generations of families that we've looked over those 250 years. You know, they still come back through.
Yeah.
So that led me on to another acquisition later on, actually. Because I'd done that one that was so successful, and
you got the taste for it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did really, and it was lovely. The reason I think I got the taste for it was because of the team that I inherited at the time, was able to work with them on growing the business as it was. And I asked all of them three questions when I took over, and I sat down with them all individually and said, if this was your business, what would you stop doing, what would you start doing, and if money was no object, what would you want to do?
Right.
And we all made a list, kept it on a shared OneDrive, and each individual person had their own list. And there's some simple things that cost no money. Can we just move that from there to there?
Right.
I said, well, yeah, that makes sense, because that's closer to that. Why haven't you done that?
Yeah,
we weren't allowed to. So it's like, okay, yeah, you go for it. And other things that cost us money, and so on and so forth. After 3 months, after 90 days, I thought, this is interesting. We've done lots of things here. There was no pushback on any of it, because it was all their ideas. And I thought, how many have we actually done? So I totaled them all up, because there was four of them, they were on different spreadsheets, and I thought, wow, that's a lot. I'm going to ask them if they know how many things they've done in a morning huddle. So next morning I go in the morning huddle, and I say, how many ideas and suggestions do you think we've done over the last 90 days? 15 or 20. I said, we've done over 100.
Wow.
And they were their ideas and suggestions. Now, people don't typically like change, but because they'd had years, sometimes decades for some of them, that wanted to make these changes, it was an easy thing to be able to do, and it improved us, and it continues to improve us now.
Wow.
Okay. I've made a note of those questions. I'm going to go back and ask my team the same thing, and I'm cross, because we've just done our appraisals, and I didn't ask those questions, so that's one I'll take away. It's really useful.
Absolutely.
This is why we do things like this, because I'm 65 in November, and you're never too old to learn.
Right.
You can just show up and talk to somebody who knows what they're doing. I did this, it worked. I didn't think of that. That's a really good idea. I'll nick it.
Yeah.
And we're all built on the things that you learn.
Absolutely.
Shows like this are so valuable.
And it's always worth hearing from other people's experiences of that, and the fact that, what worked and what didn't. Because then you can have a kind of better go at it, because they tried it for you. Just move us along then, James. You got this acquisition bug. So what did you do next?
So we then expanded that business. One of the ideas and suggestions was that we needed more space.
Right.
And where we were in the high street in Westmorling, we were a little bit kind of down the alleyway, as it were. And people, even though we'd been there for so many years, kind of didn't really know exactly where we were.
Mm.
So that, combined with the space we needed, we moved into the building next door to us, when we knocked a hole through the wall so we could all be coming and going between the two buildings. And eventually we actually moved in and expanded into the third building next to us as well. So we've got a real good presence on the high street now in Westmorling, right opposite Swan Street. And one of those buildings is called the Drawing Rooms, which is an unusual thing linked to a funeral director's, because it's actually an art gallery,
and
an event space and things as well. So the reason we did that was twofold. One is because during that time we'd opened up a new business. This was during COVID as well, in Kings Hill, which is where we live. And we opened up a business there, which was part funeral director's and part kind of a retail shop as well, which did things like flowers and cards and jewellery, memorial jewellery and different things like that as well.
Okay.
So that extension of that shop in Kings Hill then came back down to the high street in Westmorling as the Drawing Rooms. And one of the things that we love most about that event space is that once a month we hold a coffee morning. We call it our companionship cafe. And it's specifically for people and families that have lost loved ones,
right,
and then don't have that loved one that they've been potentially their partner for 60 years in some cases. And they come together once a month, and we have coffee and cake and a cup of tea, and they just talk about old times. We've had friendship groups formed from that, walking groups formed from that, and different things as well. That event space has been really nice.
Fantastic. That's a brilliant story.
I never would have thought of that in a million years.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Brilliant. brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's lovely to be able to do that, but it's also a way for people to get to know us before they need us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because people don't like going into a funeral director's, nobody does, but unfortunately, again, one of those certainties in life that at some point people may have to.
Really helped with their mental health, James.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. I assume, as with a lot of funeral directors, you do funeral plans.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is an interesting concept. You know, with my old mum, bless her heart, 94, we go, we're going to take out a funeral plan, mum. You want me to die? No.
You're going to organise the date in advance.
Yeah. It's that time, mum. Yeah. It is a difficult thing to raise with family, isn't it? Especially, she goes, not only do you want me to die, but I've got to pay for it as well. Yeah, that's the deal.
It is really interesting, and unfortunately, that part of the profession has gone through some bad times just recently. But fortunately, the good thing out of that now is the ones that are left are all FCA regulated, so that their funds are protected, and all the plans that we've had across all of our companies have always been under one of those companies that are now protected. From our point of view, it's one of the nicest things you can do for your family members. Not just the paying side of it, that's kind of a nice thing, but actually planning it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have so many families that come into us and don't even know what their loved one would want for their own service.
Yeah. I'll tell you the consternation I had when my dad went. My dad, in his will, said he wanted to be buried in the New Forest. And he can't do that. And of course, my mum was going, but it's in his will. And I go, yeah, well, I'm sorry, mum. He could have put, I want to be buried on the moon. I can't do it.
You want to be shot in a rocket to Mars. No, you can't do that either.
Yeah. I was able to compromise because I just happened to find, I live in Tenterton, and the cemetery in Tenterton has a wild area. Yeah, well, I can't remember
natural
what they call
burial
it.
Grounds. Natural burial
That's
ground.
That's it, yeah. They have a natural burial ground. Cost me a blooming fortune, but we were able to put him there, which was kind of as close as we could get to what he wanted.
Yeah.
But it's interesting when they come up with things like that, isn't it?
I mean, the other thing, though, with funeral plans, whilst we're talking about that, and Simon will correct me here if I'm wrong, but there is a tax benefit in paying for a funeral plan.
Yeah.
The honest answer is I'm not really up on funeral plans. It's not an area of the market that we at Talis have ever really explored in any great detail. So I'm going to keep my powder dry and do the big thing and say, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I think there is a benefit because of the way that what happens is if somebody dies and then you have to use their money to pay for the funeral, that complicates things enormously because... I may have got this wrong as well, but what happens is that the family have to pay, and then it has to be offset against the estate when you eventually settle the probate on the. Whereas if you've bought it in advance, none of that is an issue.
That's correct. Well, I think we're just checking actually, but I think there's also a tax benefit for you paying for your own funeral in advance as well.
Right.
But the money aside, like I say, for me, it's one of the nicest things you can do for your family and put those plans into place for people so they know what you want and trying to carry out your wishes. You know, my parents have both got plans out. My grandparents did as well.
Right.
And so on and so forth.
Cool.
As a quickie, the asset of the funeral plan is not assessed to inheritance tax on your death, but by the same token, if you paid cash, you can take it as an allowable expense from your estate, so it's a nil-sum gain.
Yeah.
But beyond that, that I knew. I was trying to think, is there something else I don't know? So I was keeping quiet. But there is obviously the estate paying is going to be a tax break, so that's good news one way or the other. Either way.
Okay, I just want to say this as well, because James has been a massive supporter of me and our school's careers program, 3030, and you come along and James gives talks to the students as part of that on careers and goal setting and all those kind of things, which you're a real student of as well as being a practitioner of, James. I know, reading a lot of the stuff that you blog about and publish on Facebook and what have you, you're a fantastic learner of leadership skills and goal setting skills. Just give us an overview of what inspired you to have that interest and some tips and and things that you give the students that we can use.
Yeah, I absolutely love the 30-30 events, and engaging with the students is such a fantastic opportunity for us as business leaders as well to see what this next generation is like coming through before they actually kind of hit our doorsteps, as it were, as people wanting a job. So I spend some time with them. I talk about a topic called Amazing 3D Goals, which is something that I came up with. We were on holiday in France, and I was working on the kitchen table one morning and listening to a Jim Rohn YouTube clip about goal setting. And just really simple. Everyone's heard of SMART goals. SMART goals, to me, are just a bit too restrictive and not quite kind of pushing you outside of your comfort zone enough. You know, things that should be realistic and achievable don't really spark.
I'm totally on board with this, only I'm much more aggressive about it. I go, no, that's far too limiting.
I want a mind-blowing goal.
You don't want a goal at all. Just throw yourself out there and do something.
Have a dream.
Well, this is where the 3D goals comes from. So the amazing 3D goal starts with your dreams. What are your dreams?
Yeah.
And they want to be amazing, not average. I don't want average things on that list. I want amazing things. Yeah. So what's your dream? Everyone's got a dream. I want you then to define that dream. That's the second D. Describe it so well that anybody could understand it, so it could make the hairs on the back of somebody else's neck stand up. And then the third D is a date or a deadline as to when you want that by.
Right.
And then that date turns it from a dream into an amazing 3D goal.
Right.
And we go through this with the students, and we talk about, because it's student related, we talk about their studies and what they want to do moving on from their school that they're typically at, and then into their careers, and then even further out than that.
Mm. I've got an important question. I'll just interject. Is that copyrighted?
It's your trademark, yeah.
Oh, it's trademark. Yeah. I can't use it because I'm going to the University of Kent on the 15th of March to go and talk to some students. So
right, okay.
We can talk off air.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Take James with you.
I might take it with me unofficially and just sort of say, I heard this on the radio the other day.
Absolutely.
That's really great.
So I do it for schools. And one of my own amazing 3D goals was that I wanted to give back.
Yeah.
So I contacted my local secondary school, which was St. George's in Gravesend. And I went back, and I've spoken there several times now. The most people, I think, are spoken to is about 120 year 11s, which is quite a tough audience, but that was a really fascinating time to do that. I spoke at my old college, which was West Kent College, now North Kent. I think they're all called North Kent colleges over in Tunbridge. And I wanted to speak at my old university. Now, this is interesting because I didn't finish university as I started at my conversation about leaving education and going into full-time work. But I contacted them and said, could I come and give a talk? So now I've ended up being a visiting lecturer for the University of Hertfordshire by giving talks about business entrepreneurship.
Fantastic.
As well.
It's so satisfying, isn't it? Especially when the students ask you a question. And it's like, wow, what a great question. You know, you get it from an 11-year-old or a 16-year-old. I mean, when the 16-year-olds, I think, engage with you, it's just really satisfying to know they've listened to what you've been saying. And then they, you know, you've got, last time I did one, I had about 11 people ask questions and I was just thrilled.
Yeah. Well, see, I tried to go back to my old school, but they said, no, sorry, you're still suspended.
Mine's been knocked down.
Yeah, you're not allowed back yet.
It's really interesting. When I was studying to be an accountant, which is what I did for a couple of years before I became a financial advisor, one of the things they taught us about, which I thought at the time, totally wrongly, was a complete waste of time, was Maslow's hierarchy
of needs.
Most people have heard. And at the time I studied, the bit at the top was self-actualization, which is just being sort of fulfilled and achieving everything. And they've now stuck another bit on the top, and I couldn't remember what it was, but it seems to be called transcendence. Somebody who knows about this might know. But I've heard it defined as actually passing back, training others, mentorship, and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's got another name than transcendence, but transcendence was the best one I could find quickly looking it up. And it is, I mean, you do it, I do it, you do it. We're all in this in this thing, and we've all been fortunate enough to do okay in business.
Yeah.
And actually putting something back is the best bit. I get my buzz from developing staff. That's what I really enjoy doing, working with colleagues.
I'm going to just say this because I need to say it. It's one of the political things that annoys me more than anything. When you see lots of people bad-mouthing business owners as evil capitalists, and I go, but I know thousands of business people, and almost all of them do something outside of making money of their businesses. Yeah. They volunteer, they do things for charity, they're on the boards of organizations, they arrange things, they sponsor things. You know, I can't, there's very few people I can think of in business that don't give something back eventually when they can.
And it's youngsters as well, isn't it? I mean, look at my Elle. She's gone into schools and she's, you know, taught in schools, with no fee. She's even taught the teachers in Canterbury College.
Yeah.
And she's on boards of, she was on the board of Seven Oaks Chamber for the young business people. It's youngsters as well.
Yeah, people do. People do want to give back and they do want to use the experiences that they've gained over time of doing things.
I think we can all remember that one teacher, can't we? Or one, elderly person, whether it was at home or what have you, that gave something to us.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for me, that's what it was. And I often start my talks at the schools with, if I'd had this talk when I was your age around setting these amazing 3D goals, I just wonder where I'd be right now.
Exactly.
And I can see some of them that are not that interested because that's what it's about. But then there's a few of them that are really interested and really keen. Yeah. They'll come and talk to you afterwards and it's fantastic. Mm.
Yeah. It's been told so often and attributed so often, it's probably the facts I'm about to give are wrong. But they did a study, I think it was at Harvard, and only something like 5% of a class of students had written goals at the end of their course. Mm. But that 5%, 20 years later, owned 95% of the wealth of that whole cohort.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it was Stanford. And again, it's one of those things you can look up.
It's hard,
but I remember looking it up at one stage, and I found it that it seemed to be true. It's so hard to find factual information these days because there's so much misinformation. Yeah. But it actually makes sense to me. You write a goal down and go for it and live it.
Mm.
It becomes real, and you make it real. You get yourself a vision of wanting to buy a business and do it and do something about it, and it happens.
Funny, James's namesake, Howard Gardner, who was the head of education at Harvard, and he was the developer of a thing that eventually became known as emotional intelligence, where he looked, he did a long-term 15-20 year study on academic success versus life success, and he found there was no real correlation between the two. Success was more predicated on attitude than it was on academic success. And he developed this whole EQ thing with emotional quotient and emotional intelligence and stuff like that.
It goes back to the Robert Kiyosaki book, The Rich Dad, Poor Dad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and how the academic dad didn't do so well as the other day.
Mm.
You said you dropped out of university. I didn't go to university.
I didn't even go to school.
Paul didn't go to school at 14.
I didn't go to university.
You didn't go to university either. And yet here we all are, in business, moderately successful, passing on our knowledge and skills. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that if I'd have actually had the savvy to go into university and learn some stuff, I might have done something differently, maybe something better. I don't know.
Mm.
But despite that academic deficit of my own making, because I was just useless at school, still being able to make something. Because of the EQ.
Exactly, and I think it's changing slightly, but of course, in our day, and some of you are younger than some of the rest of us, but
younger than you, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. Academia is a very rigid set of things that it's trying to do. Nowadays, that you can go to university, the University of Buckingham, for instance, do a degree in entrepreneurship, although Buckingham is a private university, and it's a two-year course. But academia isn't really set up to get, even business-related things like MBAs are about managing a corporation. They're not about starting a business or running a business. Mm. And I think that's the difference. And for those of us that learnt through the University of Life, I think that's where, if we are successful, the success comes from learning from our peers, learning from people, just like you just said, Simon, with James, he came out with a couple of things, you went, blimey, I hadn't thought of that.
I'll nick it.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about theft and drawing out from people and doing different things. You don't have to take something lock, stock and barrel. You can go, I could tweak that and that could work in my business.
It is a smaltzy American story I heard a few years ago. I've used it a few times since. American Grain Show.
Right.
Every year, same farmer used to win. He had the biggest farm in the middle. Mm. And at the end of the show, after he won, he would take his prize-winning grain and give it to his neighbours to use as seed crop
right.
for their fields next day. And a journalist saw this and said, you've just won. This is the best. Why are you giving away your best to your competitors? He said, yeah, they may be my competitors, but what they plant blows onto my field. So all I've got to do is make sure that my field's still got the best grain as well, and then get up a little earlier, work a little harder, work a little smarter, and I'll win next year without worrying that somebody's inferior grain is going to pollute mine. Mm. And it's just sharing the ideas actually can really help build you up.
That's a very important point. And again, coming back to my political argument about, too many people that aren't involved in business don't understand. They think that they've got this Marxist view of capitalism, which is, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. It really isn't.
No.
It really isn't. You don't. If you try to compete like that, you're going to get murdered by everybody else. Yeah. It just doesn't work like that.
One of the things I liked about the industry I'm in, and you know Zoe obviously really well, and one of the things I love about this industry is that we all work together and we all help each other. Whereas when I was in the dating industry, I was in that for 20 years, and nobody wanted to work together. I used to say, come on, let's just all do an event together, and if we all did an event together, then we'll do what we're meant to do, which is find people partners. That was the whole objective. And all my competitors were like, no, we're not going to do an event with you.
I think this is one of the nicest things about these next generations coming through, that they're so much more collaborative than the old boys and girls going out.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I think that's going to be really good for business.
Yeah, absolutely. James, thank you so much for that. It's a fantastic story. Brilliant. I'm going to pick your brains off air about acquiring companies. I fancy that now. I don't know what I'm going to buy. What am I going to buy?
We'll work on it together.
Yeah.
Tomorrow the world.
Well, I'm not. No, I don't want to go that far. Not yet. Yeah. No, just anyway.
Paul, can I just do a plug for my event tomorrow?
Yeah, of course you can.
So I'm doing the Three Peak Challenge on the 19th of May, as I mentioned in the last program.
I have sponsored you.
I know you have. Thank you.
Okay.
And so tomorrow night we're doing a LinkedIn training at Edenwood Place. So anyone who wants to have a bit more information on LinkedIn newsletters and how to use LinkedIn, optimise their profile, please come along to that training at 6 p.m. tomorrow. It is 20.
Is that every Wednesday you do that?
I'm just doing it next week because it's for the Kenwood Trust.
Right, okay.
Oh, Paul and I like the Kenwood Trust.
We certainly do. Both Simon and I are trustees of that fantastic charity. And Linda's raising money for us.
Oh, well, I'll have to sponsor you then.
Thank you.
So sponsor Linda's Three Peaks Challenge because she's raising money for the Kenwood Trust, and Paul and I think it's a very good thing.
We do.
And someone who's attempted the Three Peaks Challenge, very best of luck.
I need it.
She's got little legs, you know.
I know. Big mountains.
James, just give us a shout out for Vinyls and Sons website so that people can find out more about you should they need to.
Thank you. Yeah, it's literally Viner, V-I-N-E-R, and A-N-D, Sons, S-O-N-S, .co.uk, or Hogben and Parties, H-O-G-B-E-N-A-N-D-P-A-R-T-I-S, .co.uk in Faversham as well.
Fantastic. Thank you, James. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. We've got a couple of minutes before the end of the show. We just need to catch up with some of the data we got. Have you got anything you need to read?
Thanks, James. I've got lots of things that I'm meant to be reading.
Come on, get on with it then.
Right, okay. So
hurry up.
Plenty of us want to engage with our local community in a more meaningful way, or to coin a phrase, give something back. Oh, we were just talking about that. But we just don't know what form of service it can take for our particular skills to best use. Right now, if you're a business person, Team East Sussex, TES, might be something to consider as it's currently recruiting board members. If you're in business, you could be forgiven for thinking the public sector doesn't get it. And if you work in the public sector delivering services, you could equally be forgiven for thinking that business doesn't understand you either. This is where public-private partnerships can be enormously productive. Rye certainly isn't short of business skill and experience across many sectors, so if you're minded to put yourself forward, then there's a short application form to fill it. And it's www.eastsussex.gov.uk/business/support/economic development.
Fantastic.
Well, hey.
Mm. Evening Standard, the SME Expo, supporting the scale-up community. Building on success of its launch event, the Evening Standard's SME Expo 25-26 of April 2023 at the Excel in London once again invites founders, entrepreneurs and business leaders to attend an action-filled two-day programme and exhibition connecting the scale-up community, which is a vital part of the UK economy. So do check that out.
Okay, seaweed picked from the Kent coast is being transformed into high-end serums and perfumes inside a former casino before ending up on the shelves of Selfridges. Staff from Margate firm Heckles collect the algae from the beaches across the town every other day in order to produce its range of beauty products, soaps and candles. Goo, extracted from the plant, is then used in the making of
the items. Technical term, goo.
Goo. Inside the firm's factory, which is the former Genting Casino in Zion Place.
Fantastic. There's a Marsh Network face-to-face networking in East Sussex at Pet Village Hall on the 7th of March. Marshnetwork.co.uk to find out about that. There is Canterbury Christchurch University Mediation Clinic. Is now helping support Kent businesses. The mediation clinic, run by Canterbury Christchurch University, has increased its offer to Kent businesses by appointing Jeremy Ferris to its panel of mediators. Jeremy is an accredited Centre for Effective Dispute Resolution mediator and a partner with Canterbury law firm Furley Page. His appointment takes the number of accredited civil and commercial mediators up to 9, as the clinic expects activity to increase as Kent businesses feel the pinch of the economy.
Okay, and Monday the 6th of March, 4pm to 6pm, please join Nicola Copen for another great networking event at the University of Greenwich, hashtag Medway Campus. Tickets allow me to cater for refreshments and parking, so please do use the link below. Rolls for Goals has been delivering this event for the last 4 years, only missing 1 year due to COVID restrictions. Tickets are on Eventbrite, Rolls for Goals, Social Value Networking.
Fantastic. Dover Council have contacted us to let us know about Dover Networking. Please join us on Wednesday the 15th of March, 11am to 1pm, at the St Mary's Arts Centre, Strand Street in Sandwich, for a tourism, hospitality and industry networking event hosted by Dover District Council. Speakers include representatives from the Port of Dover, Dover Council and Bettshanger Park. If you want to find out more, you can go to campusesradio.co.uk/calendar, where there's more detail and a link to book your place.
Time for any more?
You've got one more.
Right, we hope you can join us for the next Swanley Networking meeting. The meeting is sponsored by Chamber Business Owner William Jones Funeral. Sorry about that.
Right.
And Memorials. And will be hosted at Birchwood Heights Care Home. Wednesday the 8th of March, 10:30 to 12. And it's kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic. Our next 30-30 event is taking place at St Ethelbert's School in Margate towards the end of March. It's a health and social care special, and we're doing it in conjunction with the East Kent NHS Trust. For more details, you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/30-30, and you can find out all about it there. Do join us at that. But I think we've reached the end of another show.
We have. Fantastic show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests, Money Talk Guru, our money genius, Mr. Simon Webster of Talis IFA. Simon, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Lovely to be here, Paul.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been fantastic for your first experience on the show, James, and we're going to have you back, certainly. Mr. James Gardner and Viner & Sons and other...
other hats.
Other hats and activities that you're doing. Thank you both so much for being fantastic guests on the show.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you to everybody that tweeted in and emailed. We'll be back with another show next week. Have a safe week, everybody. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.